Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the 221st episode of Awards Chat, the Hollywood Reporter's Awards podcast. I'm the host, Scott Feinberg, and this episode is presented by Bravo, Top Chef, Imposters, Watch What Happens Live with Andy Cohen, and Inside the Actor's Studio for your Emmy consideration. For more info, go to bravotv.com/Emmys. My guest today is one of the most talented comedy performers in the business, and someone who I, and a whole lot of other people, grew up with, Kenan Thompson. Thompson still has the same animated baby face that endeared him to a generation of us who watched Nickelodeon in the 90s. But, despite appearances, a lot of time has passed since all that and Kenan and Kel were on the air. Thompson is now married with a child, he just turned 40, and he is in his 15th season as a member of the cast of Saturday Night Live, meaning he recently passed Daryl Hammond to become the longest tenured performer in that show's illustrious history. You don't last that long in Studio 8H without the admiration of your boss and your peers, and Thompson certainly has both. SNL chief Lorne Michaels has said, quote, "If you were designing the perfect person for SNL, most of the components would look like Kenan," close quote. Adding, quote, "He's a thing that almost doesn't exist anymore. He's a variety performer. He can sing, he can move, he can do comedy, and he knows who he is in front of an audience," close quote. Former SNL performer and head writer Tina Fey once told an SNL host, quote, "If you take out Kenan Thompson, the studio will explode," close quote. Over the course of my conversation with Thompson in his dressing room at 30 Rock, we discussed a wide range of topics, among them how a funny kid from Atlanta wound up working for Nickelodeon, what the pros and cons were of child stardom, and what life was like after it ended for both him and for his longtime collaborator, Kel Mitchell, how, at something of a low point, an opportunity to audition for SNL came along, how he landed a place on the show, becoming the first cast member ever born after the show itself debuted in 1975, but why he felt out of place for his first several years on it, what the specific sketch was that turned his SNL experience around, and how he then began specializing not only in impressions of random real people, but also in non-topical sketches. In other words, in playing everyone from Steve Harvey and LeVar Ball to a singing lobster. Why he thinks he has remained a part of the show for as long as he has, how much longer he imagines he will be a part of it, and what he thinks he'll do after, plus much more. So without further ado, grab some orange soda, and let's go to that conversation. Kenan, thank you so much for doing this. We appreciate it.
It is my pleasure, sir.
So, always just begin with some of the basic background. Where were you born and raised? What did your folks do for a living?
Well, I was born in Columbus, Ohio, but then my parents moved to Atlanta when I was like 9 months old because they had previously lived there and had my brother there. But my mom went to nursing school at Ohio State. Go Bucks. And yeah, they moved back right after they had me. And yeah, I was raised in Atlanta.
Before doing anything professionally started, were you already clearly a funny kid, or was that, how did that kind of emerge?
I mean, yeah, I guess I enjoyed comedy, and like my brother and I would like, you know, quote movies that we'd seen on TV back and forth all day. And like that was our entertainment, like basically just quoting Coming to America over and over and over again. So it was more of a like just playing with my brother type of thing in the beginning. It wasn't like I was like a class clown type of situation. I was usually pretty reserved, as I guess you can tell. But when I did start acting, which was young, like I did a kindergarten play, like I always get like comic relief type roles.
Mm-hmm.
Just happy.
Yeah. And then I guess, again, also before the public got to know you, when you were still maybe just starting out in high school, is that when you kind of studied acting in a way for the first time, like in school? Were you doing plays and drama mm-hmm. class and all that?
Yeah, basically a lot of musical theater, plays at church and stuff like that. But like the actual study of it was, yeah, more like middle school, high school.
And it sounded from one thing I read like you were just as happy to be doing drama as comedy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's all what you do with your friends, you know what I mean? Like my circle was this young theater group and we were in an ensemble, so there was no room to just be like, guys, would you maybe want to like lighten up the material a little bit and like maybe do something just funny? Because, you know, it was a dramatic kind of theater experience. So that's what I grew up in, and that's what we grew up doing like in high school. You know what I mean? Everything in high school gets so passionate and right. emotional, and like it's the end of the world if this doesn't go right and blah, blah, blah. So it was that kind of thing. But, you know, we were a serious ensemble and we were serious about being great performers, and we used to write all the plays and write all the music and the songs and the plays and stuff like that. So it was very creative, like workshop development type stuff.
And was this the Youth Ensemble of Atlanta?
Yeah.
Because I want to ask you more about that. It sounds like they've really, over 25 or so years, helped to develop a lot of actors who have gone on to do good things.
Yeah.
And the way you ended up there, though, was because if one thing I read is correct, that you're, you know, clearly you enjoyed acting, but also was it that your parents felt you should stick with this instead of something else?
I mean, when we were growing up, we used to do a lot just to kind of stay out of trouble, I guess, growing yep. up in Atlanta. You know, we played sports and, you know, piano lessons and this, that, and the other. So theater and acting was kind of just something that stayed with me as I continued to grow up. But when I first started with that ensemble, I wasn't even acting. I was playing the keyboards. Because the lady who did the musical direction used to be the musical director at our church, and she knew that we could play the piano, me and my brother. So she brought us in to play the piano for some of the shows. And then my brother started acting in the shows, and I was young. I was still very little. So I would just play the keyboards. And I remember I played for a show, and this one time my buddy didn't show up, and he had like a solo or something, and I was like, they asked me if I would cover for him because there was no like understudies or anything. Right, it was right. just like the one guy who's left kind of playing in the back yeah. of the hood or whatever. So I was like, yeah, sure, I guess. You know what I mean? I was super nervous. I didn't really know it, but everybody knew each other's material. And so I was like, I get my courage up and I step out there and he's there, you know what I mean? Huffing and puffing. He's like, I got this. So I turned right around and went right back off stage. I didn't say a word.
Wow.
And that was like my first experience like on stage with that group. But then my brother went to like college and like we fell out of touch with the group for a while. And I started going to private school and they had a theater program there. So I fell out of touch with those guys for a while. But then I started doing Nickelodeon and Mighty Ducks and stuff, and the school tried to make me choose between acting and their school because I was missing a lot of school, I guess.
Right.
So I ended up going to public school and my mom was like, well, you know, Freddie Hendricks, the guy that, you know, taught us in that ensemble, it's his ensemble, he's a teacher at this school. I was like, well, yeah, I'll go to that school or whatever. I'm terrified, 11th grade, yeah. changing schools, yeah. you know what I mean? Private school to public school, my first public school since like grade school, right. you know what I mean? Yeah, it was in, you know, South Side Atlanta, so it wasn't a joke. So yeah, I was terrified all day because drama class was the last period of the day. So
you just
I had like
get
a
there.
Whole day's worth of just like being an outcast and
right.
blah, blah, being super nerdy because I always wore uniforms.
Yeah.
So this was the first time like dressing myself and I was just like the biggest nerd. And yes, you know, seventh period came along and I saw my one buddy and he introduced me to this other and then it just went on from there and I just felt like right at home. But it was like weird because it was like the very end of the first
right.
day. It was crazy.
Right.
Like I didn't see them at all throughout the day or none of that.
It sounds like your mom was very supportive of you pursuing acting. And in fact, wasn't there something at one point where in order to, I don't know if this would have been for Youth Ensemble of Atlanta or at a different point, but like she went to work at the school where you were?
Yeah, that was when I was little taking classes. You know, there's a theater school called the Alliance Theater School downtown mm-hmm. where they do like the symphony orchestra and like all the big plays, like they do a Christmas Carol there every yeah. year and blah, blah, blah. So yeah. they have the theater school for kids to like learn how to audition or like learn how to do this and like, you know, little character work. And when I was first starting out, yeah, she got a job there so I could take classes. Like, she was answering phones. So, yeah, she was very supportive, like, the entire way, you know what I mean? Okay. But that's, like, going above and beyond.
No, it's really amazing.
So, yeah, she's amazing.
Just because the question always comes up when people start as young as you do, do you believe in hindsight, though, that the idea of getting into acting and going as hard as you did at such a young age, was it yours, or were you kind of nudged? Would you have done it if you hadn't been kind of steered in that direction?
It was mine with a lot of support. It was never something I wanted to just, like, quit. Like, I dropped the piano after, like, I just didn't want to study classical music anymore. Like, I was never learning any, like, Ray Charles or Stevie Wonder, you know what I mean? Nothing funky, so right. Just, like, whatever with this.
Right.
Trumpet, same thing. Marching band, you know, I just felt like a giant nerd after a while, and I wasn't as good as a Marcellus, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I just let it go, like. But acting was always just, like, the one thing I kind of just never really wanted to, like, walk away from like that. It was just... It was entertaining to me because, you know, we always knew how to entertain people just by being able to, like, quote a whole movie in front of, like, that's enough to just, like, entertain, you know, grandma, grandpa, whoever's right. on the porch, right? So that was fun. But then when you multiply that times 10, you know, there's 100 people now or 200 people now, or now you're on stage with a group of people, you know, it was just it was a different type of a feeling, like, different, you know what I mean, in the fact that there wasn't that much personal competition thing. The competition was to, like, do a good show.
Right.
As opposed to being like, am I 6'5" and, like, 200 and, like, benching, pulled? You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't that kind of thing, so I kind of migrated
right
towards that more.
How did the first professional opportunities come about? What were they? I know I remember there was something about where you were, like, you were an entertainment reporter, you were a critic, you were
was far down the, like, first roads of trying it out, actually. But, like, in the beginning, that's what the Alliance taught us, was how to, like, find an agent, you know what I mean, and, like, find out where the auditions for commercials and stuff, whatever was coming through Atlanta was. And I got this original kids agent, you know, small, whatever, but they got me a, you know, audition for a fried chicken commercial, which was my first, like, job, and I did it with pride.
Yeah.
And I was like 10 years old or something, 11, and they paid me $800, which was, like, could have been $1 million,
yeah,
in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is, like, super duper cool. And then, you know, after that, I had auditioned for, like, hundreds of commercials in between, or, like, different, you know, kid shows around Atlanta or whatever. And then I was stuck on, you know, I landed the Real News for Kids thing on TBS, which was, like, a kids' news show, where kids read the news to other kids at 7 in the morning because, you know, kids are up ready to hear about the news. And I was a movie critic on that show, and, like, the first movie I critiqued was the first Mighty Ducks. And I got to meet a couple of those kids, and then I got to audition for the second one, and that's how it
That's
how
crazy. It
went. Yeah, kind of.
And the Mighty Ducks 2, did that come about before anything at Nickelodeon, or was that?
Yeah, was, like, my first, like, Hollywood gig.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it because you'd crossed paths with these guys when you were doing TBS?
No, just happened to be random, and I ended up being able to, like, send in a tape for the second one, because by that time I was well into the whole audition game, you know what I mean? So, you know, I had somebody who let, you know, I had a new agency that was, like, you know, had their hands in whatever was coming out of Hollywood or even whatever was going on in Atlanta, too. So I was able to send them a tape, and then they asked for another tape, and I was like, who's paying for all these tapes? But they asked me to come, like, audition finally for the, like, last one in L.A., and I landed that shit.
Yeah, I remember seeing it in theaters.
It was on from there.
So Nickelodeon knew about you because of D2, or a separate thing?
Ish. The director introduced me to Brian and Mike, Brian Robinson, Mike Tolan. I had a meeting with them. They had already cast the show. I was, like, the last one cast, but they were like, you got to meet this kid.
We're talking about All That.
Yeah.
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 So they say, you got to meet this kid. What? How did it go from
there?
I
was cocky, man. I don't know. Like, for some reason, it just, like, I was so used to auditioning, so this didn't feel like an audition anymore. So I thought I had a job. I just went in there, put my feet up, like, what do you need? You need a Jamaican voice? You need an old man? I got all that for you. And I guess they just liked it, so they gave me that job, too. And, yeah, we went to Orlando, like, a week or two later, something like that.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask. So how does your life change when that comes about? You got to move? Do you now become homeschooled? Like, what changed?
Well, Orlando wasn't that bad of a change for me being from Atlanta, but L.A., like, for the summer, doing Mighty Ducks was crazy. It was, like, mm-hmm. a whole nother world, you know what I mean? So I was just like, I didn't know that we were stuck way in the valley. I was just like, yo, this is Beverly Hills. You know what I'm saying? Like,
this, or were you at one of these, what do you call the apartments?
The
probably.
Oakwoods.
You were at Oakwoods?
1,000%. Yeah, right. On Woodman. Like, right. Like, keeping it all the way valley.
Yeah. Real.
You know, we were, like, you know, going to that skating rink in Burbank training. And, yeah, I was, you know, now, having lived out there, I know what was going on. But that whole thing was magical. It was like, you know, being in a country western, like, storybook or something.
Yeah.
But then when we went to Orlando, yeah, I super similar to Atlanta, you know, hot, humid apartments everywhere and stuff like that. So.
And is it tough, you know, though, at that age when you're probably now, what, like 15?
Yeah,
something like that.
14, 15, yeah.
So professionally, it's as good as you would probably hope it could be going at that point. Personally,
yeah,
though.
More than I could have, you know, even dreamed. Like, this is like a TV show for real.
Right.
A chance to do it.
Probably on a channel that you watched.
A huge fan.
Yeah.
Huge Danger Mouse, you know, was Guts out yet?
Shorts,
I don't even know if Guts was out
yet.
Double Dare, like, you know what I mean? Like, big fan. So, yeah.
But on the personal side of things, you're probably away from now your friends, maybe even some of your family.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly your school.
Yeah, school, friends. But by that time, I was focused for some reason, just because, like, once I got the bug off of that fried chicken commercial, I was like, yo, I kind of want to see what this is about. Like,
yeah.
Because there's no other, like, prevision of how you would make money when you're a kid, usually, as if it's not, like, obvious, like a genetic type of thing that mm-hmm. you're migrating towards, whether it's academics or sports, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just, like, you don't really get too many inklings of, like, the potential to be able to make, you know, a living. And I was like, oh, well, this could be like a cool career.
Yeah.
I'm obviously aware of, you know, being a movie star. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And like, am I getting close? I'm like, I might as well see what's up.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like I was super close to it. So I was, you know, not missing home that much. You know what I'm saying? Like, I would go back when we had breaks and stuff like that. But, it already felt like I had like 1 foot outside of that existence.
Right. Well, just in case anyone was unfortunate enough to not be around at the time of all that, this was primetime sketch comedy series. Probably I saw one thing where they were saying it was really targeting the 6 to 12 year old demo.
Yeah, at first.
At first,
sure.
Yeah.
I don't know why. We had like every like older person's like R&B favorite coming through there.
I was gonna say, so you're suddenly like, didn't like, Coolio or no, was that with
so cool.
Yeah.
Coolio was like in the first season, I think, or first or second one, like super early on. And we
Sinbad.
Were way too young to be having like Coolio on.
Were you adequately prepared, do you think, to deal with becoming famous at that young of an age? This was not a life that too many other 15-year-olds could relate to.
No, I mean, I don't think, and my fame didn't come until we were out of high school and into being like in our 20s or whatever, because at the time, it was just a small show on cable, basically. And whoever knew about it. And if they did, they were kids. And it's not like you're going to run into kids just everywhere you
right.
go unless you go to, like, Chuck E. Cheese.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So we just knew to kind of maybe stay away from Chuck E. Cheese in Orlando.
Right.
You know what I mean? It wasn't like we had to worry about, like, oh, in case we go to, like, St. Louis,
right.
we need security. You know what I mean? Blah, blah, blah. It wasn't like that until, like, it became kind of a nostalgia thing from us.
Right.
Continuing to work and continuing to put things out like Good Burger and stuff like
right.
that.
All that, obviously, again, was a sketch show at a time when there weren't, and there still aren't that many sketch shows. And the gold standard's always been SNL.
Mm-hmm.
Were you, even at that young of an age, thinking or dreaming, like, maybe one day I can have something to do with SNL?
Yeah, we would talk that shit, but we didn't think it was, like, really possible. We would be like, you know, we're the SNL for kids and blah, blah, blah. But it was still kind of like an adult's magical place that
right.
nobody, no Nickelodeon talent had ever, you know, platformed into, like, SNL or anything. So it kind of just seemed like, hopefully we'll continue to work.
Right,
that,
right,
you know
right.
what I mean? As opposed to, like, actually getting there.
Right.
Yeah.
When did you first learn that there was interest in maybe spinning it off to have you and this other guy, Kel Mitchell, right?
Yeah.
Do something together. This you, this Atlanta kid with this Chicago kid. How well did you know
I didn't know
each other?
That it was, well, I mean, we didn't meet until the first day of pretty much working on all that. And they had all met and had like a party or something in, I think in LA. Like they brought everybody to LA to like mm-hmm. meet each other and stuff. And then went to Orlando. But I didn't get to do any of that because I was like last picked. And it was just, you know, the first morning and we had fucking school to do before we went to rehearsal.
Right.
So, like, we're just all these kids in this trailer, like, doing our individual homework. And I was just, like, super quiet. I didn't speak to anybody for the whole 3 hours. I just did my work. And then once we got on stage, it's, like, when I came alive. I started, like, hanging out with everybody and having fun and blah, blah, blah. So after that, I remember Kel was looking me up and down, like, all in school and shit. And he was like, man, who is this nerd? Yeah, cause, like, he better than everybody else, don't want to speak. And then when we started, like, playing on the set or whatever, he was like, oh, this is, you know, we're fun and blah, blah, blah. And, like, I like him. He makes me laugh. And I was like, yeah, man, he makes me laugh. The dude's super funny. And then Josh was super funny. And it was just, like, three boys and blah, blah, blah.
Well,
Kel and I were always, like, really close because we're super similar. You know what I mean? Like, Atlanta, Chicago, being black is not too different of an experience growing up. Like, both our moms are 5 foot, you know what I mean? And, like, don't take no mess, you
right.
know what I'm saying? And we just, you know, we hit it off. And, like, because our parents were, like, able to hit it off and stuff like that. And he was just really cool. And, you know, hopefully I thought I was being cool towards him and stuff like that. We just started hanging out everywhere, and, you know, every 2 minutes, you know what I'm saying, everywhere we went, because we were just, like, two black kids in Orlando, we didn't know anybody else, you know
right.
what I'm saying? And we knew Josh, and we hung out with him and shit, but when it came to, like, thinking about a show idea, it was like, yeah, I think these two, or whatever.
So whose idea was that?
Well, I mean, Brian and Dan approached us.
Yeah.
They just pulled it to the side, like, you guys wanted your own show? We were like, frick yeah, we want our, you know what I mean? Like, is that really a question? Like,
right.
are you offering that? I didn't know that was even an option.
This was 2 years into all
it
that,
was
right?
only, yeah, after the first season.
Oh, after the first season?
Yeah. I feel like it was, like, at the Christmas break or something. I don't know. It depends on, like...
Well, so one thing I read, and this could be wrong, but they were saying once the second season of all that was complete, the actors stayed at Universal Studios in Orlando, where the show was filmed, to immediately begin Kenan and Kel.
Yes, but we had to do a pilot first.
Right,
so, like,
right,
I
right.
think halfway through the season, they were like, we're going to try to work out this deal or whatever. And by the end of the season, it was like, we got a deal. And then we did a pilot in between.
Right.
And then we did the whole second season of all that, and we're like, okay, we're picked up, and we're gonna go into Kenan and Kel.
Gotcha.
That's how I think it went.
And what was there was something where you and Kel separately were interviewing, you both said the moment you knew you would be okay working with each other was something about Mavis and Clavis.
Oh, 1,000%. That was the first time we were actually put, like, together, just us two.
Yeah.
And it was, like, very comfortable shoes because we were, like, imitating old black men, basically. You know what I'm saying? Like, we were supposed to just be doing old men, but in our minds, we were doing both old black dudes that we've grown up seeing. You
right.
know what I mean? And we just, that's when we knew we were very similar.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We
right.
just started improvising back and forth on something we think, you know, we heard, or something we think an old man, you know, would say or whatever. And it just happened to be, of course, from the black experience. And we were like, okay, we're very similar dudes. And yeah, we make each other laugh, and we kind of get each other. So we start just, you know, complimenting each other like that, like, pretty immediately.
I would imagine that in those days especially, there probably weren't that many black executives at Nickelodeon. Do you remember how it felt to be, you know, a black kid at working for a place where, again, I could be wrong, but how many other black people were around when you were making these shows?
Yeah, it wasn't many, you know what I'm saying? And I don't know, I guess I had been used to that, just being black, you know what I'm saying? You're always going to be, like, in a smaller number of things in most places that you go, especially when you're stepping outside of the norm, you know what I mean? Like, most black kids aren't, like, doing TV shows and stuff
right.
like that, you know what I'm saying? So the numbers just get lower and lower naturally or whatever, so we didn't really pay attention to that. We were kind of just happy to have each other, you know what I'm saying? Like, somebody else to bounce off. Like, you feel me? You're like, I feel you.
Right.
Then we can just move on to whatever else.
Right. Why do you think both shows, but I guess particularly Kenan and Kel, why do you think they were so popular? There's still a whole generation of people who they hear Orange Soda or they hear Good Burger or anything like that.
Yeah.
It takes them right back. So what was it about it?
I mean, it's just to capture joy, I think. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, they say we had, like, lightning in the bottle with the cast of all that, and the cast, Kenan and Kel and this, that, and the other, and, like, us being talented at a young age. But honestly, they were able to pull genuine, like, fun moments out of us and tape that. And when you watch it back, it looks as fun as it was happening. And I think that's kind of like what stays with people after they watch it. It's like, man, they look like they were having so much time, on top of the fact that, yeah, it was quirky and funny and blah, blah, blah. And Kel was the most physical person I've ever seen in my life. So anytime he went off on a tangent, it was just like, yeah, that's going to be able to sustain it. Like, 20 years later, I'm going to come back and be able to, like, watch that dude hop right. on a counter and, like, fall. And that's going to make me laugh, for
right.
sure.
How did the Nickelodeon era come to an end? Why did it come to an end?
Yeah, we just, you know, we got to the end of our contract. We had, like, a time period that, like, ended at 2000 or something. And by that time, we were, like, 21-ish, 22.
So were you happy to get out anyway?
Yeah, I was just feeling like you can't be on Nickelodeon forever. I mean, you can always come back as a dad or something
right.
like that. But, you know, it's kind of weird being, like, the older college cousin or something, or just staying there that long and never really trying to, like, graduate into, like, you know, real shows. Because at that age, people that weren't on Nickelodeon were our friends as well. So people that had, like, real shows, like Brandy, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
had, like, all these, like, you know, network things going on, Wayne's
oh,
Brothers, you
know
what I mean? Like,
guys?
Yeah, we just know all of them
yeah.
just from being in L.A. and,
right.
like, working. And, you know, Nickelodeon would have all those events. Kids' Choice would bring everybody out. Big Help would bring a lot of, you know, famous people out.
Yeah.
So we kind of knew everybody, but we were, like, over here in the cable world.
Right.
and the kids world, as opposed to like just being in a network world and like being whoever's, you know, audience or whatever.
Right.
Of course, one to get like the grown up, you know, version of yourself going too. So.
Right. What were those years like between the end of Nick and the beginning of SNL? I think we're talking about like 3 years.
It was like raw, you know what I'm saying, for me, because I was living in Los Angeles and I don't have any like family there. You know,
you
what
had
saying?
Moved
like,
out right after Nick.
Right after high school.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like once we turned 18, Kel and I, they moved both shows to LA.
Oh, okay.
So it was just a big pickup. Like my family kind of stops in Texas. So I'm out there kind of just, you know, on my own. And then, you know, Nickelodeon earnings start running short or whatever, and like shit gets real, and then like trying to figure out like, oh, can I get a job over here and get a job at Felicity or get a movie here, and you know what I mean, this kind of role, blah blah blah. And it started to become like a real hustle.
Yeah.
And it was the first time it became like a real grown up hustle, because I had been, you know, job to job to job to job, you know, kind of just, once I got one, that introduced me to the other, you know what I mean, without kind of stop. Till I got to the, you know, I guess, you know, ceiling of the kids' world, basically.
Yeah.
So breaking through to the adult was kind of like starting from scratch, but at the same time having to pay for breaks and having to pay for, you know what I'm saying, meals and rent and blah, blah, blah. I'm figuring out, like, this apartment's too small. Maybe if I get a roommate, we can get something bigger. Like, all that adult
And this
bullshit.
Is all after the Nickelodeon period mm-hmm. ended. Because, I mean, I don't know. I think people, they may assume, all right, so he had a show of his own, or, you know, with Kel on Nick for all those years. The guy must have left rich.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that, but, you know, we left okay, you know what I'm saying? And then, you know, no money lasts forever, because even when you're making money like that, you're still spending, you know what I'm saying? So
agents get their cut. Everybody gets their cut.
Yeah, 1,000%. Yeah. So, you know, and then continually, so even when you're not working, you still got to pay. So
right.
It's like, you know, everything you get, there's a chunk missing, taxes and this, that, and the other. Right. So,
was any part of you worried at that point, again, before SNL, that in some ways the thing that, you know, was the reward for doing a good job all those early years, the thing that you really got known in a show where it's even named after your real name and people so associate you with that persona on screen and everything, that could make it actually harder for you now when you're trying to branch out and do other things?
I mean, it wasn't something that I was prepared for, but it definitely happened. You know what I mean? There were a lot of roles that I couldn't get because, like, I was either, like, too young looking or they knew my face. Even today, like, there's movies that people say, like, oh, we kind of, like, want to do, like, an unfamiliar cast. Now, I get that, you know what I'm saying? Because it can take people out of it if they recognize a face that's kind of out of water as opposed to, like, oh, that's just a character actor that works. And I love that guy when he just does characters and everything kind of serves the story, which is like the ultimate goal. So there was a lot of that, you know what I'm saying? And it also like made me like cherish friendships and like real relationships with people outside of like the industry, because when you're not on set, there's like a whole lot of California that has nothing to do with Hollywood, and there's just like real shit going on.
Right.
So it's like interesting to have gotten that perspective, you know, all while I'm trying to attain this like magical, you know, celebrity status of some sort from being like a movie star or a TV star. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
And how were you keeping a toe in comedy specifically during those years? Did you ever try to do stand up or?
I did, but I kind of got pushed away from it in my early years, because when we first moved out there, I was like very young and very green, and I didn't really understand that stand up was like a business. You know what I mean? So I kind of just was like hanging around the comedy clubs because like that's where the black people were. Then they would like go to the clubs. So that's how I learned like the club scene, you know, just following people from the comedy clubs like to that, because I was such a huge fan. I didn't know what to do with my nights.
So who were the people you were hanging around with?
Oh, this is the improv. Just all those dudes, whoever, you know, I wasn't really hanging with them.
Right, following.
They were just doing, you know, their shit. And, you know, I was just, you know, as a, like, audience fan or whatever.
Right.
You know, Monday night at the improv, Tuesday night at the comedy store, Wednesday, wherever, Thursday, you know what I mean? Like, all through the weekend. So between, like, the comedy store and the improv and, like, I guess the Laugh Factory or whatever, I would just, like, follow the crowds, basically, to all these different parties and shit. But, yeah. I was green because I didn't really understand the concept of, like, the hustle of it. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I didn't know that people would kind of look at me as, like, a kid with a TV show who's just around these clubs without going on stage. It's like, why are you around here? You know what I'm saying? Like, you trying to steal jokes or whatever? And, like, I would hear, like, that kind of chatter going on. And nobody ever, like, directly confronted me, but I would hear, like, little shit as people would, like, walk by, like, what the fuck you doing in here? You know what I'm saying? Like, you got a show or whatever. And I was like, oh, shit. I forget that people are using this to try to attain something as opposed to like just entertaining these people who want to have like a strawberry daiquiri like myself, you know what I'm saying? Because I couldn't drink yet.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's what made it. I was like, oh shit, I forget that, you know, this is a business and it's not just like for the love or whatever.
Right.
I mean, it is, of course, but like everybody's kind of doing it to get somewhere. And that was like my wake up call to that. So I kind of like laid back off a bit because it's not what I do. It's, you know, I mean, I was already like a working actor and I like consider myself as an actor.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah.
When you look back at those years now, it's a place you would not want to go back to, like, and not because of employment or whatever, but just like it was what your mind headspace was not great or was okay.
It was great.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it taught me a lot. You know what I mean? It definitely taught me how to be able to be myself no matter what's happening, highs and lows. You know what I'm saying? Like, whether I'm balling out of control or, you know, I'm trying to figure out, like, if I'm going to pay this cable or if I'm going to let it go for this month, you know what I'm saying, or whatever. And I can still be me, you know what I'm saying? So, like, that was the thing I take away from that time the most. It's like, yeah, if it ever gets, like, rougher than rough, I can, like, go drive a bus somewhere in Hawaii or something and just, like, still be happy, you know what I'm saying? And be able to just, like, live a life as opposed to, like, always wanting to be the biggest or the best or, like, or just to be in L.A. or be in Beverly Hills or just be in, you know what I mean, Bel Air and shit like that. And, like, just doing that whole Chase the Dragon lifestyle, basically. Like, oh, that's a Maserati, but that's last year's Maserati. Right.
So for a guy who was, it sounds like, spending more time watching comedy than making it, how did you hear from SNL?
I was auditioning. Like, you know, I was still represented well. So I was able to, like, put my, you know, hat in the ring whenever they were looking for people. It was like, oh, well, this guy's got talent, you know what I mean? He's got sketch comedy background and this, that, and the other. So I would send them tapes of all that, clips, and they would say, yeah, well, he's great, you know, he still looks kind of young or whatever. And it was like a couple years of that. And then Tracy finally left the show, so there was like a big opening. So they did like a big flooded, you know, casting call, and I got to try
out
finally.
You're saying that specifically they felt they needed to have a person of color in that, like, if he's leaving, they need a, that's the way you felt they were.
Well, it was like him and I think Jerry, there was like two people that left. So, yeah, I mean, it was a black casting call. Like, you know, I can't, like, front on it. Like, that's what we were all black.
Basically. Well, is it true that when you went in for the showcase that ended up working out for you, who else was in that showcase class?
Well, Kel was there at the first one, like the first one, and then I didn't see him at the callbacks. Yeah, we did one more show at the Laugh Factory, but he wasn't in that part of it. So he was in the running in the very beginning, yeah. And I hadn't seen him for a while. And then I saw him there that night. And that was surprising because we hadn't talked in a couple years or whatever. So I was like, oh, shit, what's up, dog? He's like, what's up, man? And we were both, like, in our heads about the audition, so it wasn't a lot of back and forth.
Right.
And then I think he went up, and I was outside, like, trying to figure my shit out. And then I went in, and, like, I was trying to, like, figure out when I was going on, so I didn't see him again anymore, and then, like, I didn't see him again for, like, a couple years more down the line and shit. So
and when those stretches happen, that was, is it just because you guys are busy doing your thing, or was there a kind of a falling out?
No, I mean, it was more just, you know, kind of just two different paths of life at the time, you know what I mean? Kind of just him living out his life that he's been, you know, carved out for himself in Pasadena, and me kind of, you know, had moved to New York or whatever overnight, basically, seeing what this world is. And as you can see, like, we're in here with no windows and shit, so you kind of get trapped in a bubble a little bit.
Right.
Especially, like, you look up and it's 15 years later. That shit is crazy.
Yeah. So the audition process, I think you said it was in L.A., but who was observing? What did it entail? How did
it started in New York, but the last callback thing was in L.A., but yeah. And it was at this small, I shouldn't say small, the stage was small in this comedy club. It was the stand-up New York, like a real comedy, like people smoking cigarettes and stuff, like right in front of the stage, and you know what I mean? I was like, I didn't think you could smoke in New York anymore, but for some reason, they're keeping it real in here. So it was really all about, like, what you're thinking and no kind of, you know, ability to do just physical shit or anything like that, unless you wanted to tear shit up, which you, you know, could, but it wouldn't be very welcome there.
Right.
But I remember when I got there, I saw Lauren getting out of his car and I saw him with Tina and, like, they walked in and blah, blah. I was like, shh, oh man, this is real, like, from the very beginning. So it was real. And then the callback was on the stage and I couldn't see who was in the audience, but I could kind of hear there was like a table in the shadows or whatever. But apparently, like, Maya was there and, like, Seth and I think, you know, Lauren and Tina and those guys, so.
And how did it go in your mind?
Much better because, like, I wasn't a stand-up, you know what I mean? So I felt like I bombed the first time or whatever because I didn't do any kind of like observance comedy. I was just doing characters. I started with a phone call between Al Sharpton and Arnold Schwarzenegger, like just with like a sound effect of a phone ringing, like as opposed to saying, how you guys doing tonight or anything like that. You know what I mean? So it played insanely quiet. But I got the call back and I was like, all right, cool. And that was on the stage. So it was like, you know, straight to camera. So it was much more just direct sketch type stuff. So I was like, that's cool.
Do you remember
way better.
How you found out you had gotten it?
Yeah. A week went by after that first stage callback. I went back to L.A. and like a week went by and I hadn't heard anything. I was like, man, it's over. And then they called and they were like, we want to do one more audition at the Laugh Factory. And I was like, shit, fucking more stand-up. And they were like, can you do 7 minutes this time? I was like, I guess. Like, I don't really know what I'm going to say. It's the most nervous I've ever been in my life. Because it was only down to like me and like three or four other people. And they were all stand-ups. And so they were crushing it. I mean, just destroying the room because their shit is tight. To get to that point, they were polished, you know, stand-up dudes. So they all ripped the house down. And I remember I just kept drinking water. I was drinking water out of the bathroom sink. Like, I just kept filling up this bottle because, like, no matter how much I drank, my shit, I felt like my mouth was dry. And I was like, man, I'm so nervous. And I went out there and did the same shit. But it was a little better that time because it wasn't like my first time on stage or whatever. But it didn't compare to like what them dudes did. And then, you know, Finesse and I got hired. And that's how it went. But it was only a night or two after that that I got the call. Right. And then they were like, so I think the audition maybe was like on a Friday or something. And they were like, so can you get to New York by like Monday? I was like, yeah, sure, I guess. Like, I just left all my shit. I was like, yo, homie, pack my shit, please. Thank you.
So you felt that compared to the other people you were up against, you were not the standout. Why do you, have they ever told you why they went with you?
Well, Maya put it in perspective for me. I never really asked, but I kind of were talking about it for her because we were talking about auditions and I was like, yeah, I don't know what they saw in me. She was like, I think it was pretty obvious that they saw that you were good at, like, you know, TV work and that you'd done television before and like you can get into a sketch and like not have a hard time or whatever. And like you can do voices and characters and shit. So that was apparent. But like as far as like being able to like tell a joke based on fucking airline miles or some shit.
So you started in 2003. You were the youngest member of the cast then, the first cast member ever born after the show itself was born in 1975. For those first two seasons, you're featured cast member. And from what I've been able to gather, you were not a particularly happy camper. So why was that? What was so rough about those first couple of years?
I mean, I was happy, but like I wasn't in the show much unless it was like, you know, something quick in the cold open or, you know, small things. I didn't have a character, so I got donutted a couple times, you know what I'm saying? And
that means you're nowhere in that.
That means you're sitting in this room watching everything go by. It's like, I was still very confident in my career at that point. So I was like, why am I even here? You know what I'm saying? Like, they're obviously like migrating more towards Finesse, you know what I mean? Because he came in like the man, he was crushing it. I just didn't know what my place would be here yet. So.
And was part of the issue.
It wasn't like I was like pissed, but there were, you know, several nights where it didn't feel great.
Yeah. But you think part of the issue was just that you had not yet hooked up with writers that were here? Like,
yeah, so- I had never had the writing responsibility before. Like Nickelodeon, they wrote everything and just we, you know, our job was to like take it and make it whatever, you know, make it funny or put a voice to it or just put mannerisms to it. Right. It wasn't like, you know, joke formulas or, you know, sketch formulas or anything like that. So that's the kind of thing that you learn in improv school, which is something I wish I would have done, but I didn't think I would wind up in an improv environment. I thought I'd just be like, you know, working and going from job to job to job, as opposed to like actually finding a home somewhere, which is, you know, very rare for an actor.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's why I wasn't like ever very, you know, eager to just want to leave it. You know what I'm saying? Because it was like a one of a kind type of experience. But even when it sucks, it's still like, well, I am here, you know what I'm saying? And the good news about this place is that there is going to be another show.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That there is going to be another season and blah, blah, blah. So
in those early years, though, when you didn't feel it was clicking, did you in any way sort of live in fear of getting fired, or did you and Lauren already
every
have
summer,
a...
You know,
really?
I mean, like, they have a, you know, option every summer. And it's just like for the first 7 years of your experience here, like you're optioned every summer. Like, you can tell that you don't have to worry, I guess, once it's been like a couple, 2, 3, 4 years of like, you know, steadily progressing on the show. But in the beginning, it's like, you never know. You know what I'm saying? So I felt like when I was given opportunities, I did great things. But then there were 15 other people. The cast was like 16, 17 deep back then. And all those people are like the top people in comedy doing main shit right now, trying to platform into that at the time. So there wasn't a lot of room for me if I wasn't writing for myself, and I didn't know how to write for myself yet.
Did that really change in the same year that you became a full cast member, 05, that was the same year that Brian Tucker joined as a writer? Was that an important thing for you?
Big time, because it, you know, was somebody who mirrored my sense of humor, you know what I mean, and was able to, like, communicate my thoughts into sketch form, basically.
The way you've described it, just so people know who we're talking about, you've said that the two of you write, quote, a lot of the black sketches, close quote, right? Why is that? Can you explain what you mean by that?
It's no secret that Brian has an encyclopedic type of a knowledge of black culture. You know what I'm saying? He's overly, like...
Is he black himself? I don't know.
He's not.
Yeah.
But he's just, like, you know, overly versed in it. For whatever reasons, he's just very familiar with like Sanford and Son and Jeffersons and like all that stuff that would be second nature for me, but it's not necessarily second nature for, you know, a white dude from North Carolina Virginia. You know what I mean? He's like, you know, as white as can be. So just his like joy of bringing out, you know, I mean, it's just very much of like a early Wayans tone. You know what I mean? Like just the joy of like being able to joke about certain things that are in black culture and stuff like that. So. Once we started doing that and like making each other laugh, it was like, oh, we can probably, you know, he can help me. I was saying to myself, he can definitely help me like get this craziness out of my mind and make it make sense.
A lot of SNL cast members, past and present, if you read things they say, they seem to, one of the stresses is they can't really figure out what Lorne Michaels is thinking about them.
Yeah.
And when he did this episode, because I guess he keeps everything close to the vest. And when we did the episode with him here within the last year, I just came out and asked him. I said, like, is it a strategy, because this has been the suspicion of some people, that if you don't give out approval easily, people work harder to try to get it? Do you think that's...
He's the greatest Jedi mind tricker ever. I don't know if you know this shit or not, but, like, he has a way of being like, so, you know, people would like this to be good, right? And he'll walk away. And she's like, is it not good? How did it get past the table? What the fuck is going on? And then you'll go out there and destroy it. You know what I mean? And like, he has a way of like lighting that flame under people, which is great coaching. Like, whether you agree with the whole chair tossing thing and his players winning the championship or not, it's just the way you engage your players. So yeah, he's great at that.
For somebody who doesn't know the process here of just what you've been dealing with for the last 15 years, can you take us through what a week looks like at SNL starting on Sunday? Just what the week involves for a cast member?
Well, for your first show, Sunday is probably like a blur because you're constantly thinking about like what tomorrow's going to be like. And then Monday doesn't start until late in the afternoon. So for people that are on the show, like, they're not even paying attention to Monday. But you're like, what the fuck time do I go in there? You know what I'm saying? And like...
Right.
When are they gonna call? And like, I'm in New York and I don't like know anybody. Like, what is there to do? Like Broadway doesn't start till 7, so like, I don't really have. I got that pastrami sandwich, but past that, I don't know what. Like, you know what I mean? Like the whole day, you're just waiting.
Right.
And then the pitch meeting is like 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, or even 6 or whatever. But your call time is like around 4:30 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
So you go in, and then like everybody's like mingling, and it's just like a college atmosphere all over again, or high school or whatever. People that know each other well, and like people that are ready, you know, and engaging to new people and people that are not, you know what I'm saying? And everybody goes, you're just so green, you don't know where to stand, you don't know where to sit. You got an office, but you don't know what to do with it. You know what I mean? It's just like you're standing around waiting. And then we pitch, we all pile into Lauren's office, and people sit on the floor, and you don't know where to sit. So you're basically like sitting on top of people, like just like weirdly on the floor, like an adult, but not. And then like everybody goes around the room and they pitch, and it's like they're all super funny and super different and creative and shit like that. And you're like, man, how the fuck do I fit in with this? But I'll throw something out there and just be silly, and that's what you do. And then everybody leaves, and it's like people can start work on Monday if you want or not, but the deadline for writing is Wednesday morning. So because some people leave, a lot of people leave, like when you're brand new, you stay. You know what I'm saying? You just stay till 8 or 9. Everybody's gone. You're just like, should I be typing something? You know what I mean? Like, my first year, I didn't write shit because I was used to, like, not writing shit. So I was just kind of, like, sitting there, like, watching everybody. And then there was nobody to watch. So that's when I knew it was time to go
home. Time to go home.
Yeah. And then, you know, Tuesday came around, same thing. Like, I showed up mad late on Tuesday because there was no call time because, like, the only deadline I can say is Wednesday morning. Mm-hmm. So I came in at like 6:30 or something on Tuesday, and like people were well into their offices. All the doors were closed, you know what I'm saying? So everybody was like off writing and like really doing like the program basically, but I didn't know the program. So I wandered around like, you know, smoking weed in staircases and like just wandering around the building, like just super lost. And like watching people come up with ideas. And then Maya came to me with that Cosby idea and Wanda Sykes thing. Thank God for that, because otherwise I don't know if I would have had anything in the show, because I didn't know the burden, you know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't know that my responsibility was to like write two things or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I didn't know anything about the process. I knew Adam Sandler and Chris Farley and David Spade, and I knew those guys, you know what I'm saying? And Chris Rock, and I didn't know how they got to those moments at all. So I sat around bullshitting basically. And then Wednesday is a table read, and that's what, you know, that's what I do. You know what I'm saying? Like, we get scripts, I read shit, start doing shit or whatever. So when we did the Cosby thing, it scored, you know what I mean? I was like, dope. They picked it. I don't think I had much else in the show. So Thursday, I think I might have been on call. And Friday, I came in for like one quick thing. So the week went by really quick. Thursday is the rehearsal day, basically the first one. But it's not a long day because they'll only rehearse things that don't take much set-wise, because they need time to get all the stuff in from like the Navy Brooklyn Yard or whatever. So Friday is like the day where they do like all the tough sketches. Mm-hmm. So Thursday, well, like today was only like 3 or 4 things or whatever. Yeah. So Friday was like the super long day, but still for me it was like, you know, one thing or whatever. And then Saturday, my thing was an update basically, which rehearses at like 7 o'clock. So it was like another thing of like just waiting all day and kind of like wandering around doing nothing, you know what I mean? Like watching the show go by or whatever. But then 7 o'clock does roll around, you know what I'm saying? And I do have to like do the update thing, and like I'm getting my fitting and I have my tux and my ball cap and blah, blah, blah. Then it was time for dress rehearsals. I had to put the ball cap on for real and like, you know, get ready for the show. And the show came on. There's Jack Black, and he was crushing, and it was like, all right, cool. And then it was time for like update, you know what I mean, after the musical guest. So I was like, all right, put the tux on, get ready. And I think it was Tina and Jimmy crushing it for their first opening or whatever, and it came like halfway through update. You know, I'm sitting there like as Bill Cosby, like in this tuxedo, like just listening to all this historic shit happening in the studio that I've been like really like knowing about my whole life, you know what I'm saying? Like when I was born and growing up, and you know what I mean, like Eddie Murphy was known as a movie star, but he was also known from jumping from Saturday Night. So like all his Saturday Night shit was like infamous. Mm-hmm. And as I grew up, you know, I started to like become more of a student of it. So
yeah,
sitting there like listening to it all happen, like this was the first time I'm like in the studio and feeling the experience of like them say something and the response from 300 people. I was like, man, this is incredible. And I'm gonna sit in the dark. And then like the lights came up on me and like they threw it to us. And Maya came down the steps doing her impressive ass Wanda Sykes, you know what I mean? She was just so polished and such a strong performer. Like it, you know, didn't make her nervous at all. But I was just sitting there terrified because I was like, I was confident in my Cosby or whatever, but you know, people don't know who, yeah, I didn't think anybody knew who I was or would want to engage in it or whatever, but that first line scored, and from there on, it was just like, all right, cool. Like,
you're
if you do
way,
things,
yeah.
Yeah, if you do things that make sense and you're confident in it, you know, people respond to it. So the only thing you have to worry about at that point is it funny?
Yeah. And you've said Weekend Update's always been your favorite part of the show. Is that right? For you to be a part of?
It's one of them. Yeah. Very high up there.
Just because it's more like,
there's nothing better than when you have a sketch on the show that goes well when you do it. That's just a beat out type of a character or whatever. Because that's the ultimate, you know what I mean? Like representation of the show. But as far as like straight to camera and it's just joke, like you don't even have to worry, it's like doing it at the table basically. That's a lot of fun.
Was a big turning point for you, I think, October 17th, 2009. Everybody says that after those frustrating few years, then that comes along, and that was the first night you guys ever did What's Up With That. Just to remind people, this is where you're playing DeAndre Cole, the host of a BET talk show, quote, tackling the issues of today with soul, close quote. So how did that sketch come together? Why did it work? And just how did it change things for you?
It did change things for me. Like, my first biggest change was Scared Straight when I wrote that with Jost, because that was like my first sketch that went well as me as the lead. You know what I mean? Like, T-Shawn wrote me this like Randy the Bellhop sketch that I tanked because I was so nervous and so green, and it was just like a random kind of thing. It was funny, but like I tanked this one line so hard and I couldn't even improv out of it. And like I heard this like audible like aw from this like one lady in the audience. I was like, man, it's that quiet in here? Like, and of course it got cut or whatever. Right. So it was a couple years later when Joe's came in and Scared Straight started happening. And that's when I was like, yeah, I love that. That was like my first, like, I feel like I'm representing this place in the proper way finally with like one of my ideas.
Right.
And then what's up with that? I was just like, I went to Tucker one day and I was like, I think I have an idea where I like sing, like I invite people to a talk show, but don't let them talk. You know what I mean? And I was like, I just continually sing throughout it.
Right.
And yeah, we just started going from there. And he's like, oh, that's funny. Like, just keep going back into like the theme song. And then like little beats about like, when people are trying to like do their interview part, like the band will start playing things and that'll trigger me to like want to like get back into the theme song, shit like that, and just started growing. And then he just started adding like the awesome absurdities like Lindsey Buckingham and like, you know, Jake the Snake Roberts and like all those other characters, making it like a real circus. Like that was all Brian. Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, it's kind of, I guess, a great example of what a lot of your collaborators over the years have said, which is that you're an MVP, not just the show is always well received, and when there's topical stuff like it's presidential election year, we're gonna have somebody do Trump. We're gonna have somebody like it's, you know, you've got to do those things. But the rest of the time, you still have to put on a show and come up with stuff that's not obvious. And they say that's really where you've kind of shined, especially. And I saw it. I mentioned to you I was here like maybe 3 weeks ago for the John Mulaney episode, and there was the most insane sketch. I think I can't even, when you describe it, it sounds bonkers that you're going to do to Les Mis music, a sketch about ordering lobster in a diner.
It's so New York.
And you're the lobster.
Yeah. And I'm the lobster.
So, I mean, it's not that you don't do real people or real things, because you've done more impressions, I think, than anybody else who's ever been on the show. I saw a stat, 126 or something. I'm going to ask you about it in a second. But like just the more random stuff, why is that your forte?
I mean, it's as much a part of the job and responsibility as anything else, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, even if you are a great impersonator and you come here, if you're not able to contribute to the rest of the show, that becomes readily apparent. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, I always wanted to be a well-rounded, I can do whatever's asked of me type of dude anyway. You know what I mean? Big time, like, team player type of dude. So I also remember, like, Lauren in our first like cast meetings being like, the show worked great if you guys all look like you like each other, you know what I mean? Like, so work well with each other, you know, break off into groups and try different things, you know, blah blah blah. I was like, I always kept that in my mind. It's like, try to be more of a team player, and like your strengths will be obvious, I guess, if you do it enough, you know what I'm saying? So just like, I don't like self-promoting myself like that. I feel like people will find out when they need to find out, because I'm doing enough work to where it's just like, yeah, of course, like that's out there. Go see it or whatever if you want. I don't know. It's weird. But yeah, I just always have been like that. And I've also known, like, I need people. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I was able to sit down and like type a sketch all by myself, I might be more of a dick. But, you know, no, I know, you know, I'm humble enough to know that I do well when I'm working with others. So
with the impersonations, I wonder, can I just list a few of the ones that stand out in my mind as hilarious? Just like a sentence about what stands out most to you when I say these people. All right. Jimmy McMillan. This was the rent is too damn high candidate.
This place is such a blessing because people like that emerge in life. You know what I mean? And you're able to like turn that around and show them kind of like what they look like, basically.
Right.
And that's what he looked like to us, basically. This guy with this like super duper look to him, and he wears these gloves because he's like worried about Agent Orange and like all these different little like things that we're not making up. These are things that he's saying, you know what I mean? And it's just like, God, on down the list, like to like LeVar Ball now.
This well, that's
like,
they're coming
where
ahead.
Do these people like come from? But it's like, that doesn't matter. The point is, they're out there, and we get a chance to like not mimic, because that seems like we're just doing like nanny nanny boo boo, you don't really exist type shit, but like kind of hold the mirror up to life, basically. Oh, yeah.
David Ortiz, I just can't believe when you do that. Yeah.
I mean, just glee all over that dude. Happy about food, happy about life, happy about being a stud.
The Rev, Al Sharpton.
Always been like, you know, anybody with a big voice is always a lot of fun in life. And he's a, just, you know, a character in himself.
Right.
Just like since day one, since, you know, like David Alan Greer was doing him on Living Color, you know what I mean, with the perm and the jumpsuits and stuff like that. So the fact that he stayed relevant enough for me to be able to do him in my time was just like, yeah, I love that dude. Gotta do it. You know, he's, you know, one of those figures.
The doctor, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
God, another joyous one, like just happy about, you know, the littlest things that, you know, excite him in life, which is, you know, mostly science-based that nobody else can relate to, but it tickles him, so.
Steve Harvey?
Yeah, I know Steve from doing the Steve Harvey Show, and then he's another one that just stayed out there in life, you know, and became like a relevant type of a figure that I could like impersonate.
Right.
And people would know who I'm talking about. It took a while. It didn't happen until, like, I tried it when he still had hair.
Right.
And they didn't really like respond to it like that, because it was more of a black thing, I guess, at the time. And then once he did like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, it was like more of like a joke that people can relate to because they witnessed that moment too.
Right.
So everybody was in on the same kind of like, oh, we know who this guy is, and that moment was brilliant because, you know, maybe he should have prepared a little more or something.
Now he got Miss Universe.
Right.
All right, so the way we close, if it's all right with you, we always just sort of a rapid fire. The first thing that comes to your mind of just about 10 different lines here. First of all, you got married in 2011, I believe. You had a kid in 2014. Is it hard to be both a great SNL contributor and a family man? How do you juggle these two major responsibilities?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's hard for anybody that's working some odd hours a week where you're not home much, which is why you depend on your partner to be strong in that area. You know what I'm saying? So that's what makes a partnership strong, is like supporting each other. You know what I mean? When there's like something to be supported, like this is a moment, and everybody can kind of recognize that Saturday Night Live is like to be taken seriously, even if it's like my 15th year or not. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Talk about last season, which was the 42nd, and by every measure, the ratings, the reviews, the Emmys, I think one of the most, maybe the most successful ever. You're in the middle of it. When did you realize it was on a different level, and why do you think it was?
I mean, I knew it was on a different level from the first time he did Trump. You know what I mean? Like, he knocked it out of the park, like, real hard. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that happen a few different ways. You know what I mean? Like, you knew when Jimmy was a rock star when he was about to graduate and go be who he was. You know what I mean? You see it when, you know, Tina was doing it in certain moments, when they just have, like, the studio in the palm of their hand. Like, you know, we saw it when Tina was doing Sarah Palin, basically. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, every word out of her mouth, people were like, unable to contain himself, because it was just like, it's so on point, and it's so like smart and funny and unexpected at the same time, that people are like, they feel privileged to be witnessing it and all that shit. So I'd seen that like happen in a bunch of different ways, I guess. So once he did it and it got that same kind of response, and it was just like the air of the nation at the time too, it was just like, oh, this is explosive, because we'll be tackling this like every week in a way that it's different from when Seth and, you know, The Tonight Show and, you know, The Daily Show, when they touch on it, because they touch on so many topics and they're on every day.
Right.
So when we hit something, it's kind of an accumulation of like the week's worth, and then everybody can process the whole week together in the form of Alec Baldwin being Donald Trump.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's like, you know that shit is hitting coast to coast because we travel, you know what I'm saying? So wherever, you know, whatever restaurant I wind up in that's far away from here, you still hear about people doing like, you know, Alec Baldwin, that's crazy. Like, I thought always, like, you know, that guy said, you know, whatever.
When did you first begin warming up the 8H audience with song and dance before shows? I've been here three times. At first, I thought I'd hit the jackpot. Like, this is what did I do to get so lucky? Now I realize you do it every time.
Yes. I started doing it with Fred, because Fred and Kristen were doing it right before I was doing it. And after Fred and after Kristen stopped doing it, Fred asked me to do it, I guess because I had sang a bunch of different things, and he was like, do you want to like do something? I was like, yeah, sure. And he picked, I was just like, I'll background whatever. So it was him basically doing the song, but it was that, you must explain why this must be. Ding, ding, ding,
and now what do you do?
It was like me and Taryn. Right. And Fred was like the lead guy because he was playing the guitar and shit. And then once Fred left, it was just like wide open. So they offered it to me, I think. And I started doing it from there.
What's your song that you go to again?
Right now, it's Give Me Some Lovin'. But right. I started, I think, doing like Saturday or something like that with Elton John. And then I did like Long Train Running with the Doobie Brothers. And then
and you got your backup
went back
dancers.
To Saturday, you know what I mean? Then I got backup dancers, yeah. And then it became like, once we got on like Give Me Some Lovin', it was tight.
So last season you tied, and this season you broke the Daryl Hammond record for longest tenured cast member. How did you process that? Can you kind of believe that?
I almost felt a little guilty because like I've always been close to Daryl. You know what I mean? Like my whole time here, he's always kind of just been like my dude. Because my first year, my first side like college gig, it was me, Seth, and Daryl, and me and Seth traveled up to Connecticut or whatever, wherever it was, together. And then Daryl came like mad late. And we didn't know if he was going to make it or whatever. But then he showed up at the last minute and then, like, crushed it for an hour. And I was like, damn. I went up first. And then Seth went. And Daryl still wasn't there. So it was like, is he going to make it? And, like, right when we said that, he walked in. And then, like, yeah, he's like, sorry, my driver got lost or whatever, blah, blah, blah. Just went to the stage, went right out there and fucking slayed it. And I was like, damn. He just was. And it wasn't like he was just, like, because it was like a basketball gym, so the audience was kind of far away, so it wasn't like he was like doing crowd work for 10 minutes. He started with politics and stayed on it for an hour. And I was like, that's fucking impressive. So I always had, he's Yoda type, you know, relationship with him. And he reciprocated that. He was always like, you know, checking in on me and like, you cool, you know, blah, blah, blah. How you feeling, man? And he would always like jive with me, like, you know what I'm saying? Sure enough. Like, yeah. You love black culture too. And yeah. So when I started like coming close to the record, I watched him personally put in all that work for years and all that impression work and opening the show. I don't think anybody said Live from New York more than Daryl, because like there was a ginormous window where it was just like all political cold opens, you know what I'm saying? And it was just like before Obama,
right,
and after Will Ferrell's George Bush, it was just like all about like all these like CNBC and MSNBC shows being the cold open and shit, and Daryl was like front and center of all of those. So like when I started approaching the record, I was like, man, that's crazy. He graduated from the show and, you know, he was gone, and I was like, shit. Usually when you graduate, your legacy stays for a while, you know what I mean? But his was like being the longest running dude, and then like shortly after him leaving, I was coming behind that, you know what I'm saying? So
right.
It felt a little guilty at first, but he was always cool about it. He's like, coming up on that record, and I was like, yeah. And he was high-fiving and patting me on the back and shit. So
how'd you mark the occasion? What'd you do?
I didn't do anything because I don't really know exactly where the record is, you know what I'm saying? Because we had this like weird strike year, so I don't know the exact number of shows.
Right, right.
And
oh,
I feel
wait,
like
yeah.
It's a little narcissistic to like look into it.
Right.
So I don't really know where it's at, but like in conversation it's like, oh, you got it, you know what I'm saying? So I'm like, oh, I do? All right, cool. And then I started just like representing it like that. But I don't know, I should celebrate it at some point, but I don't know, maybe I'll save it for like when it's actually over and celebrate that number.
Is it hard when people that you've been close with on the show who I, you know, people like, I would imagine Tina and Jimmy and Kristen and on, when they leave, like, is that?
It's incredibly emotional. It's super sad because it starts on Wednesday, you know what I mean? And then, you know, it actually starts when you kind of know that they're leaving. But as far as like the crying of it all, it's like a few days worth, you know what I mean? As opposed to just like that last show and then we all cry at the after party and then it's over. It's like, no, it's like drawn out, you know what I mean? And then it's the same kind of, it's not like you graduate from high school and then like go into NASA, you know what I mean? We're all still doing comedy. So they
right.
all come back, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like re-somber again because it's like now it's different, you
right.
know what I mean? So it's always like very sad because you know that's about to happen. Like it's never going to be the same as it was, but you know, it opens up to new experience at the same time and new people get to come in and that's a necessity, you know what I mean? But at the same time, yeah, it's like the first time when you like left all your friends at summer camp or some shit, and it's like it's overly emotional for no reason.
Well, Lorne has said about you, quote, "I dread the day when he actually leaves. I would have him back for the next 20 years if I could figure out a way to keep him," close quote. Do you think about leaving? How will you know when the time has come? What will life look like after, you know, those questions?
I think about leaving, and I fear it, you know what I'm saying? Like, just because, like I said, like, I know that it's going to be, like, it's never going to be the same, you know what I mean? It's like, and it sucks, because this is such a special place, and you want to do your part here, but you also want to, like, make room for people, you know what I'm saying, that are coming behind you and blah, 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 so... This was the first year I really started feeling like, okay, I could, like, kind of push out of it now. Because, like, Chris came in and, like, you know, he's super duper strong. You know what I'm saying? And I really look forward to, like, his potential on the show. And that was the first time I was like, maybe I should position out to give this dude, like, more room. You know what I'm saying? Like, when, like, anybody else that came behind me, it was kind of like I still needed to, like, participate. You know what I'm saying? Like, I had more to do. And, like, I had places where I felt like I was, like, super needed. Now it's like, you know... It's good that they got an extra, you know what I'm saying? But, like, Chris kind of can do all that stuff. And, like, now it's like, well, if that's the case, then, yeah. It might be time to, like, move on or whatever, but...
No actual...
Not
plans.
Really. Yeah. Like, I'm not overly excited about going back to auditioning.
Well, that leads to the last two here. If 50 years from now they're studying SNL in some college class or whatever, and they could only show one Kenan sketch from SNL to the students... Which would you most like it to be? Which would you least like it to be?
I'd probably have to say a tie between the Black Jeopardy's, Tom Hanks's, and Chadwick's. Just because, like, Chadwick's Black Jeopardy was like, do we have enough legs to do this one more time and have it still be awesome? And it was. I was like, that's dope. Tom Hanks was just, like, obviously dope. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I think that one and, like, least worthy probably... It had to be something probably from dress rehearsal that got cut for some awful reason. Yeah, there's been so many ideas that hit the floor. So,
last question. A lot of people who started acting at as young an age as you, including people who worked at Nick when you were there, have had a lot of personal struggles adapting to adulthood and acting as an adult and all of that. Mm-hmm. Why do you think you were able to avoid that? What does it tell us about you?
I think I've been blessed, number one, you know what I'm saying, to stay out of trouble. I've had my incidences where things with people out in the world haven't necessarily gone as smoothly as they could have just from being young in the fact that people are going to, like, come up to you and it's their one time in their mind that they get to see you and they want that experience to last, whether that's a picture or a nice engagement, regardless of what you're doing. If I'm out with my family, I'm out with my daughter, if I'm out eating or if I'm in the bathroom, like, your personal, like, time kind of, like, has to be put to the side if you don't want to, like, just get into bullshit confrontation with people, you know what I'm saying? And I had to, like, learn that while I was, you know, kind of, like, known to people, you know what I'm saying? And, like, I got into, like, heated engagements with a lot of people. I never felt great about it afterwards, and then I had to, like, look at the situation and be like, well, how hard is it to just say yes and take the picture, you know what I'm saying? As opposed to, like, yo, I'm trying to chill right now, or, like, I'm eating, can we wait for this and that? You know what I mean? Just kind of, like, there's no book for that, you know what I mean? There's no book of how to, like, keep people from feeling like they're going to be embarrassed, because that's when people act out, like, when it's already taken a lot for them to come up and speak to you in the first place. And just knowing all that, because for me, it was never that serious. Like, I see somebody famous, and I, like, run up to them and be like, yo, you the man, and leave it at that.
Yeah.
But for everybody, it's different, you know what I'm saying? Some people want pictures, some people want, like, a real engagement, you know what I mean? Some people just want to relish the fact that it's happening, you know what I'm saying? So people treat it different, and I had a hard time dealing with that in the beginning when it was starting to become, like, more of a thing every time I went outside somewhere. So you just learn, like, well, maybe wear a hat if you're gonna ride the subway, or do this and that and the other, but don't put it on them for loving you. That makes no sense, you know what I'm saying? But like I said, there's no book for that,
right?
And I had to learn that, but luckily, it was on a one-on-one basis as opposed to, like, me flipping out on, like, 1,000 teenage girls who were, like, watching me eat lunch, like a Justin Bieber situation. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not really fair for that dude, because nobody can prepare you for that, because nobody knows it's going to happen like that for you. Nobody knows it's going to, like, blow up into that situation. So when it does, it's like, you can try to tell them, like, maybe be nice to the fans or whatever, but in the moment, it's like, it's still a burden on the person. So it's hard for them to, like, calculate how to kind of put themselves out of the equation and make an interaction with people much easier and keep it happy. You know what I'm saying? Just take a picture, shake the hand, say thank you. I was always a mannerable person, you know what I mean? But as far as, like, trying to get along with my day, or maybe I'm having a bad day, you know what I mean? Like, none of that shit matters, because as that person goes on in their life, that's all they're going to remember. You know what I mean? And I had it happen to me as well when it goes shitty. So it's like I had to learn like not to try to reciprocate those things. Right. And it's tough. But as far as like getting in trouble, I'm not a knucklehead. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm
well,
not
I don't even
really
mean getting in trouble. It's just you've been, forget it, if you hadn't even been a child, like child star, this is a, certainly for SNL, according to Lauren and everybody else, and just like the model person. So it's amazing when you consider that there was that extra challenge in a way that so many other people can't deal with.
Yeah, especially like for me, it was never really that big of a deal when people would come up and like, you know, want to take my time away from like walking out of a store to like call their daughter or this, that, and the other. When I started seeing it seep into like other people's lives like that were around me, like my mom not being able to do anything or my wife not being able to enjoy her time or, you know, anybody like freaking my daughter out or anything like that, I had to learn like how to not pit bull out on people and be like, yo, respect my space, you know what I'm saying? And just like figure out a way to like let people know that these things might happen, but if it does, I'll take care of it and you guys can go on to the car, or I'll fall back and like deal with the people and shit like that and kind of make it smooth for everybody. That just comes from like the original joy of doing comedy in the first place, was like making people laugh, you know what I'm saying? So why would you shit on them for like running up to you and loving that, you know what I mean?
Right.
Just because if somebody sees you and then another person comes in, and yeah, it might turn into a thing, but like, you know, whatever, you know what I'm saying? It's all complimentary, so.
Thank you so much for doing this. I appreciate it.
No, my pleasure. Thanks for coming into my dungeon.
Thanks very much for tuning in to Awards Chatter. We really appreciate you taking the time to do that, and would really appreciate you taking a minute more to subscribe to our podcast for free on iTunes or your podcast app, and to leave us a rating as well. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can reach me via Twitter at twitter.com/ScottFeinberg. And you can follow all of my coverage between episodes at thr.com/TheRace. Until next time, thanks for joining us.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.